coming to you loud and clear from our safe and germ-free homes and on Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, filling in for Tom Clark, and as always, we're here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. As usual, Zorba, we got a few topics to talk about.
You bet. We're going to talk about what you should do to live a long, sweet life, information that comes from the Harvard Longitudinal Study that I think you will be very interested in. And then we're going to talk about, in this time of COVID, what's going on with air pollution, some very interesting data that's just coming in down the line that I think you're going to be very surprised about.
All right, and what's our special recipe today?
Old-fashioned, and let me actually emphasize that. Old-fashioned beef stew. I love beef stew. I love beef stew around this time of year, and I think you're going to love this recipe.
Sounds great. 800-462-7413 is the number to call where you can leave a voicemail anytime with your question for Zorba. And then stay tuned. You might just hear yourself on an upcoming episode of our show. That's 800-462-7413. I'm also happy to announce later in the show, we'll hear from Tom Clark in his famously well-stocked kitchen for the recipe. All right. We've been combing
legendary,
through your...
Yep. Legendary, well-stocked. State-of-the-art kitchen. That's exactly
not old-fashioned. Not old-fashioned.
Not an old-fashioned kitchen. No, that's Tom in the apron. Food Network Tom. Actually, that's what we should call him. Food Network Tom.
FNT. All right. We've been combing through your many voicemails. The listeners have left us, and of course, Zorba is going to be answering your questions throughout the program. Let's kick off the calls today. This is a twofer, Zorba. We're going to get a twofer on these calls here.
Okay.
This is a pair of callers who have related questions, and both the callers are from right here in Wisconsin.
Hey, Zorba, love your show. See, my question is, I bought a wood smoker, and I'm wondering what your opinion is on the health effects of meat that is smoked with wood. I appreciate your answer, and thank you for a great show.
Hi, Zorba, Zorba staff, talk show, radio program. Excellent program you have. Question I have is on cooking out chicken and hamburgers and bratwursts and wieners on the grill. Is it best to use natural wood coal chips or charcoal briquettes as cancer-causing agents? Let me know. Thank you. Keep up the good work. Bye now.
You know, these are really interesting questions, and they're interesting because people have had questions for quite a long time about whether or not grilling is actually bad for you because of the production of nitrosamines. And nitrosamines kind of actually occur. Do you know when they occur, Carl?
When you burn something or cook
when
something?
When you cook something and fat goes on the fire, can you spell nitrosamines? I mean, that's the other thing.
Too many letters. Nope.
Too many letters. Not enough time. But what happens is when fat falls in and actually then is produced, no matter what it is, you know, on a hot rock, on a charcoal, on a gas grill, or on something that is heated by wood chips, you get the same thing, and you have a theoretical chance of cancer. Now, when I say theoretical, the reason why it's theoretical is we know the nitrosamines are produced, but there's no evidence that we have, no hard evidence that people who grill more actually have more cancer. And now, I'll give you an example. If this were the case, we would find, even though people in Wisconsin grill all winter long, and I do love grilling, do you grill when in the wintertime when it's below zero?
Not usually, no. I'm not one of those.
Have you ever done it when it's
below
zero?
I've done it. Yes, I've done it, and I've participated in grilling events that are below zero.
And I got a question for you. When you participate in the grilling events that are below zero, is there alcohol involved in that grilling event?
Once in a while.
That's right. There's usually beer. And I do remember, I know I'm going off on a side about this. I do remember going up, my kids would engage in ski racing, and it was like below zero. We're grilling on the grill, and I'm sending the video over to my cousins in California. But anyway, getting back to the issue at hand, people who grill more generally are people who live in the southern United States because it's nicer. They go outside of their grill. People in Florida, Texas, Alabama, the Deep South, they grill all year round, and they do not have higher incidence of cancer. So although nitrosamines theoretically are a problem, no matter what it is, whether it's, like I said, gas, charcoal, wood, no matter. I think it's not a maximal problem. I think if you're going to grill every single day and you're going to use beef on the grill every single day, that's probably not good for you because you're grilling something that's animal fat every single day. But I think, no, grill with impunity. Grill a couple of times a week, maybe not every single day. And wood chips, gas, or charcoal briquettes, no difference.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413 is the number to call. Let's keep the calls rolling, Zorba. So let's hear now from a listener in... All right, Zorba, let's do trivia again. You want to do trivia where you guess the city?
Of course, of course.
You've been doing better at this lately,
I feel like. Yeah, right, better. Better means one out of like 12.
All right, this caller's city, okay, I'm going to give you two clues. This caller's city has a population of right around 190,000.
As if the population of this city is the way I think of the United States. Okay. 190,000. Okay.
Okay, you got that. This clue might be, maybe you can zero in on it a little better with this clue. This city is where Mountain Dew was invented.
I have no idea. No idea. I don't drink Mountain Dew. I am not a Dew person. If I drink anything, it's actually, what do you think I drink? When I go to, if I go and I want to have a soft drink that's fizzy, what do you think I get when I go to my local convenience store? You'll never guess.
Do you get like a La Croix or like a Klarbrun fizzy water?
Not at all. Go ahead. Try number two. That's
so a soda. You're talking about a soda. What soda do
something,
you drink?
Something fizzy. That's
something
all.
Fizzy. Something fizzy. 7-Up?
Okay. No. Go ahead. Sprite? You got one more.
So you flipped the trivia on me now. Okay.
That's it. Go ahead.
Well, you're a doctor. How about Dr. Pepper?
No. I drink Red Bull. I drink Red Bull. I like the flavor of Red Bull. I drink non-caloric Red Bull, and I like the flavor of it, and I kind of like the can. I like the way the can is. So see, you would never have guessed that, right? You wouldn't guess that I am a Red Bull person.
I had no idea.
I mean, I'm 73. I am 73, and Red Bull turns me on. That's exactly. So go ahead. Now.
Okay.
I'm going to guess Indianapolis, Indiana.
Nope. Good guess. Knoxville, Tennessee is the city.
Oh, see, it wasn't too far away.
Yeah, that's where Mountain Dew was invented. All right, anyways, let's hear from this caller in Knoxville.
Ever since I've been wearing these masks I'm supposed to wear, I literally cannot breathe when I have it on. I've had customers at work say, are you all right? Because, you know, I'm breathing so hard, I have to take the mask off to catch fresh breath. I wonder if there's something else I can do to make this more tolerable because I work retail and so I wear it a lot. Thank you.
It's a problem. This is not a small problem. This is a big problem. And it's a problem, especially with people with breathing difficulties, because you have a mask, it's tight on there, and it's not just that you're rebreathing some of your carbon dioxide, which actually is pretty minimal. It's that it's harder to get your breath out. I mean, I have noticed this when I'm in my office and I wear a mask and I wear a typical mask, which is, which is a filter mask. I'm holding it up right now. I hope you people can see it on the radio.
Yeah, they see it. Right they now, definitely
that's
see
right,
that.
They can see it on the radio. But I mean, I discovered that I'm actually more tired at the end of the day and I don't have any breathing problems. I don't have any asthma or anything else.
Is that where the Red Bull comes in?
That's where the Red Bull comes in. Exactly.
You got to get through those shifts.
That's exactly it. So, you know, it's a matter then of varying the mask that you're wearing. So I'll tell you what I did. I went to the Wall Street Journal. There's an article. I get the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post. There are about four or five newspapers that I read every single day. And I read medical newsletters. And the Wall Street Journal, if you Google Wall Street Journal masks, and we'll put this up on our website. We'll put a connector on our website, zorbapastor.org. We're going to put up the link. Carl, you're going to do that. You're going to put up the
I'll
link
put it
to
up
this.
There.
I liked the Carrara mask. The best, C-A-R-A-A. I think that's exactly what it was, Cara, C-A-R-A-A. And that was the mask that I found really, really good. It was really the easiest mask for me. I love the fact of how it felt. And I found it very, very comfortable because it was a little bit lax. And it was a double cotton mask. So it actually was very good. And they gave it high ratings. I tried the best fit one, which was made by Wayre, W-A-Y-R-E. I didn't like it. it as much, but the Cara, C-A-R-A-A, was wonderful. I think, I don't remember exactly what the price was, but I didn't think it was too bad. That's what I would do. I would also, if that fails, I would go to some of the bandana type masks if that fails. But that really will make a difference because this particular mask I loved.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. Leave a message with a question for Zorba. And we'll get back to your calls in just a bit. But first, Zorba, let's get into our first topic today. We've got a new Harvard study out that reveals some ways we can extend our lives by up to 10 years.
Right, right. And actually, the new Harvard study is actually an old Harvard study. So back in the day, we're talking about many, many, many years ago. It might be in its 50th year or its 43rd. I'm not exactly sure. But they took people from Boston. Okay, you've got Harvard in Boston, and then you've got everybody else, right? Mm-hmm, but right. They took people from indigent areas in Boston. In other words, they took And the initial study was all men, the first study. The second study was men and women. But they took working class families, and they also took Harvard students. And they followed both over time to try to figure out whether any things that actually were producing longevity. And this study is the longest longevity study in existence today. And there's a very interesting thing. When they interviewed the working class guys, the working class guy said, "Why are you still following us after all these years?" When they interviewed the Harvard graduates, they didn't ask that question. They were like, "Of course, you're following us because we're from Harvard over all these
years." Sure.
Very interesting. But they discovered a number of things. So I want to go over a few of them. I'm going to tell you a side study that was actually the most important. They found five important things, but there was a sixth thing that came out about a year ago that was even more important. Fruits and veggies every day, very important. Move all the time, every day, very important. Reach your healthy weight. And your healthy weight is generally the weight that you were after high school or 4 to 5 years after high school. You know, when you go to college, they call it the freshman 20.
Mm-hmm.
First go to college. I could call it the COVID 20 when we're sitting around.
How about the COVID 19? Just a pound less?
Hey, you know what? It's the COVID 19. I like that. You know, you've got away with those words. Advertising, Carol. You should have gone into advertising. But getting to a healthy weight, you know, a BMI roughly, you know, a 25 or less. Moderating alcohol, not zero alcohol, unless that's really something that's very important to you or if you're an alcoholic. Moderate alcohol, drink a day, two drinks a day. And of course, No smoking. You know, those are the five things. But if you look at the corollary study that looked at it, it turned out that social relationships were key in longevity. And if you think about this time of COVID, you think about what we're going through with COVID. If you don't have friends, if you don't have a family, if you're stuck at home, if you're not doing anything, you have no one to talk to, it's really, really, really tough. It's really, really, really hard. So you've got these five things, fruits and veggies, moving right, healthy weight. But the social relationships, if you're not nurturing them, there's something you have to nurture, especially now in the time of COVID. So we've got some keys here that make sense. And it's really a matter of then looking at your own personal life plan and saying, what could I do better? Should I be eating more fruits and veggies? Am I moving every day? You know, with COVID, I kind of feel like we have a cloud over our head. And that cloud can be lifted by a good backbench of social relationships or just getting out of the house, moving around, summer, fall, or winter, spring, north or south, east or west in the country. Get moving. And if you're going to move, try to move with somebody else. As long as they're 6 feet apart, maybe wearing a mask, that would be even better.
800-462-7413 is the number to call. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's get back to your calls now. This is a caller from New York.
Yes, I'd like to know the doctor's position on fluoride for children, if it has any negative side effects.
I think fluoride is only positive. I do not think it's negative. Now, the anti-fluoride movement has been around forever, ever since we started fluoridating water. And as soon as we started fluoridating water, we cut down on cavities by, I'm not sure what the percentage is, but it's probably 80% or 85 or 90%.
Wow.
Incredible amount. And because when fluoride is incorporated in the growing tooth, in the permanent teeth that are developing in the human being as they go from baby to adult, and we're actually growing our teeth, when fluoride is developed into the tooth, and I'm not sure if it's into the enamel, it probably is into the enamel, I'd have to look it up. But when it's into the tooth, we have fewer cavities. And that's why we have toothpaste that is now fluoridated, and that's why fluoride is now in the water. Now, this is very interesting because in a number of cities like Spokane, Washington, they periodically come out with, you know, with votes on whether or not they should fluoridate water or not fluoridate the water. I am pro-fluoride. I have no doubt about it. I think fluoride is good. And back in the day, people were saying fluoride was a communist plot to corrupt our youth. You know, in this day, they'd probably say fluoride was a socialist plot to corrupt our youth, since the communists are in the background of things. But the reality is, I am pro-fluoride. I am not against it. If you're really anti-fluoride and you've got fluoride in your water, then you've got to drink bottled water, which, by the way, does not have fluoride. And if you have any children around the house, I recommend they use only fluoride toothpaste.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. But before we take a break, Zorba, it's time to unholster your gavel, powder up your parliamentary wig. This is a segment we call Judge Zorba. All right. The following email came to us from Melinda in Springfield, Missouri. Melinda writes, "Hi, Zorba. First, I love your show and have listened for many, many years. I'm over 60 years old and have always been a bath taker. In recent times, I feel, quote unquote, bath shamed by some that prefer to take showers. These bath shamers make me feel less clean and say baths are gross.
Bath shaming.
Is there any evidence bathers are less clean after a bath than shower takers? Are you a bather or are you a shower absorber?
No, I'm not.
Both.
A bather. I'm not a bather.
You can be both.
No, I have a hot tub at home, so I'm a hot tubber. I'm a hot tubber. I have a hot tub outside. I love to go in the hot tub. I especially like the hot tub when it's like 0 or 10 degrees below 0, because I'm sitting in the hot tub with a hat on.
Yeah.
Sitting there, you know, smoking my – no, I'm not smoking this.
Drinking your Red Bull.
Drinking my Red Bull. The answer, of course, is if you're bathing, you're sitting in the water. A lot of people find that kind of gross. But the reality, think about what you're actually doing in the water. I mean, bathing was very common until showers were sort of – I don't want to say they were invented, but showers were not common in bathrooms until – we don't call them shower rooms. We call them bathrooms.
Sure.
Because that's what people did. And, of course, you don't put little kids in the shower. They don't like showers. They like bath water. And little kids are generally even dirtier than adults. So no, I think bathing in the water is okay. I think that's fine. I mean, you've got some dirt on you. You've got some grime on you. But think about it. The average tub probably has, I don't know how many gallons of water are in the average tub, but I would guess you've got 25 gallons. Maybe you've got 50 gallons somewhere in that range. That's an approximation, maybe a little bit less. And then you've got maybe, if you've got dirt on you, maybe you've got like a couple tablespoonfuls, like 4 to 5 ounces of dirt. I don't think there's any problem with that. That being said, I don't take baths anymore because I feel cleaner in the showers, but I would never, ever, ever thinking of shaming someone for taking a bath. I think that is over the top awful. And I think we should have a campaign against the bath shamers of the world because they are doing the bathers a disservice.
Have a suit you need settled? Perhaps a bathing suit? Judge Zorba is always happy to lay down the law, or at least just lay down in the bath, maybe not. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have more of your calls to come, more of your emails as well, and Zorba and Tom will be cooking up an old-fashioned beef stew in Chef Tom's cozy kitchen. All that's coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Now, we know you don't just listen to this show for Zorba's healthy living advice. You also come here to see what culinary delights are on Chef Tom's inspired menu. So let's head over to Tom Clark's fabled kitchen, where Zorba and Tom are cooking up a delicious pot of old-fashioned beef stew.
Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Don't worry, Carl will be back in just a few minutes. But first, a heart-healthy beef recipe.
Yeah, right. Right. A heart-healthy beef recipe. Come on, Tom. What could be heart-healthy about old-fashioned beef stew? I mean, give me a break. I mean, you know, it's old-fashioned beef stew that we love.
Can I substitute a tofu for beef?
Old-fashioned tofu stew. Can you see Mother saying, your mother going, hey, Tom, guess what we're having today for dinner? Tofu.
Let's do this recipe.
Now, did your mother make beef stew?
Yeah.
Now, my good friend Dan Barry, Dan and Kate Barry, took their kids, and they were on a boat for like a year with their kids. And they brought, one of the cans they brought were Dinty Moore beef stew.
Oh, yes.
And you know something? Because they ate so much of it, if I say Dinty Moore, he goes, I can't take it. It's got its own taste to it. But I remember Dinty Moore. This is much better than Dinty Moore beef stew. Okay, let's do it. So start out, we're going to have to get 1 pound of beef stewing meat trimmed and cut into ice cubes.
Okay. Yeah. And?
A quarter of a cup of all-purpose flour.
Quarter cup all-purpose flour.
And let me tell you what I use. I happen to like Wondra, W-O-N-D-R-A. Wondra is flour that is made by General Mills, and it actually doesn't lump up. It is the best things for thickening stews and things of that nature, W-O-N-D-R-A, Wondra. And I don't know if you have that. Do you have that in your kitchen, Tom? You have Wondra?
Let's see. My kitchen. I've got some soft drinks in the fridge and TV dinners.
I don't think you have Wondra. We're, of course, going to use some salt and pepper, so a quarter teaspoon of fresh ground pepper.
S&P?
That's right. 5 teaspoons of vegetable oil. Any vegetable oil is fine, but I always use olive oil. That's my go-to vegetable oil.
5 little tea vegetable oil.
2 tablespoonfuls of red wine vinegar.
2 big tea red wine vinegar.
1 cup of red wine. Choose a red wine that you like. A dry red wine would be my favorite. I probably would choose a Merlot, but I might choose a Pinot Noir. But choose a red wine that you like.
Now we're starting to get something I'd like. red wine.
3.5 cups of beef broth, homemade or low sodium canned. I have never made beef broth in my life, so I'm going to use the regular beef broth, either the Better Than Bouillon, which is my go-to. Better Than Bouillon makes the best bouillon around, and I'll make 3.5 cups from that, from the Better Than Bouillon beef broth. That's what I would recommend.
3.5 cups beef broth.
Yeah, the regular, if you get beef broth cubes, they're not good. They're really too salty. A couple of bay leaves.
2 bay leaves.
1 medium onion peeled and chopped.
A medium onion peeled and chopped.
5 medium carrots peeled and cut into 1/4 inch rounds.
5 medium carrots peeled and cut into 1/4 inch rounds.
That's right. 2 large baking potatoes. Peel them and cut them into some nice, probably 3/4 inch cubes.
2 large baking potatoes peeled, cut into 3/4 inch cubes.
A couple of teaspoons of salt and a teaspoon, or if you like it even more, a tablespoonful, preferably of fresh thyme leaves.
2 teaspoons salt and some thyme leaves.
Okay, here's how you make it. Combine the flour and pepper in a bowl, then add the beef, toss it and coat it. Take 3 teaspoons of the oil in a large pot. What you want to do is you want to get that oil heated up to the point where it's shimmering. It's got to be shimmering. That means it's hot enough, and that's going to be probably at about 300 degrees. Add the beef a few pieces at a time. Do not overcrowd it because you want to make sure that it's nice and braised. Cook it, turning the pieces until they're brown. That takes about 5 minutes per batch, and it's probably going to take you at least 2 batches, maybe even more. You might have to add a little bit of extra oil in between those batches. Then remove the beef from the pot, add the vinegar and the wine together, and then then cook it over medium heat. What you want to do when you add the vinegar and wine is you want to take a whisk, whisk it around, and make sure either with a whisk or a spatula that you remove all the scrapings from the pan, because the pan has all the scrapings, which is wonderful taste that's added to it. And you can use a wooden spoon or a metal spoon, but you want to add that in there. Then you get that all mixed around, and the beef broth, the bay leaves, bring it to a boil, reduce it to a slow simmer, cover and cook it, skimming it, put the beef back in there, cover it and cook it, skimming it from time to time until the beef is nice and tender, about an hour and a half. Then after that's all done, then you add your onions, your carrots, you simmer for about 10 minutes. Then you add the potatoes, you simmer for another 30 minutes until they're done. And then if you need to, you may have to add a little bone broth or a little bit more water if it turns out everything is dry. Season it with S&P, ladle it to four bowls, put some Worcestershire sauce on the side. If you want to, add a little bit of Worcestershire sauce on the side. Some people add a little bit of ketchup. And wonderful old-fashioned beef stew. Something that even you, Tom, in your stellar kitchen could make.
It actually sounds good. It's a lot of stuff there.
We used to deliver
the recipes. How do people get this recipe now?
They go to zorbapastor.org. That's zorbapastor.org. Or, of course, they can find us through Facebook.
Zorba, thanks for the recipe. And now, here's Carl.
Thanks, Tom. 800-462-7413 is the number to call. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's get back to those callers now. This is a caller from Wisconsin.
Hello, I have a question. My grandson is experiencing some kind of a problem in his workout when he does the climbing rope. When he gets near the top, suddenly he feels like he's out of control and weak in the knees.
So it sounds like your grandson is climbing up a rope.
Right, like in gym class where you climb the rope.
Did you ever do that?
I mean, I was assigned to do that.
I'm
not sure I ever made it all the way up.
How far did you make it?
I feel like maybe I got halfway. I was never great at the rope climb. That was always kind of an intimidating task when you're in physical education. You're just like, uh-oh, it's rope climb day.
I mean, it's totally intimidating class. It's like you had to have upper body strength. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember Marshall Belgrad could easily get to the top and get to the bottom because he was a kind of a thin, muscular guy. And I think I made it up like a quarter of the rope, something like that. It was kind of intimidating, kind of embarrassing. If you're short of breath at the top of the rope, it may be either because your strength is giving out and it's dangerous because you're on a rope and you've got to go down. But my recommendation is go to another exercise. I mean, there are lots of things you can do for upper body strength that do not involve something that's dangerous. And I think it brings up a really important point, which has to do with exercise and danger. So when you think about exercise, you want to think about how you can improve your body, upper body strength, leg strength, you know, back strength and all those things. But you don't want to put yourself in a dangerous situation. And there are a lot of people, especially young guys, who may put themselves in a dangerous situation when they're, we'll say, bench pressing and they don't have somebody who's actually spotting them. So I don't have a specific answer for her grandson, but I would say if he feels short of breath when he's at the top of it, but he's okay when he's doing other exercises where he's lifting weights, there probably is nothing going wrong physiologically that would produce a problem for him. Safety first whenever you're exercising.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413 is the number to call if you'd like to leave a message for Zorba. And Zorba, we get so many calls from our wonderful listeners with so many great questions, but we also get calls from those helpful listeners who offer up their comments and their health tips. So let's take some time now to hear a few of these calls in the segment we call Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments. People calling us with their health tips.
Thanks. We appreciate it.
Yes, we do. We do appreciate it. All right. First up, Zorba, on a recent show, you were talking about dryer sheets and a listener brought up wool dryer balls using those. Do you remember that discussion?
I do. I don't have them yet. Do you?
I don't know. I've looked at them, though, now since that discussion. Have you looked into it at all, or do you know?
Zero.
Or do we just – nothing?
Zero.
Okay, that's fine.
Zero.
Stick
out of
with
sight,
the sheets.
Out of mind. Once the show's over, it's out of my brain.
Well, we have a caller here who might be an expert on wool dryer balls. This is a caller from Oklahoma.
Is it, like a sheep herder? It could be a sheep herder. Or is somebody, you know, a sheep herder or a shepherd? Maybe
shepherd.
It's a shepherd.
That's the word.
It's a shepherd.
Shepherd. Yeah.
So you have a shepherd from Oklahoma who calls?
This is a shepherd in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
I have been using wool dryer balls for years. They are fantastic, and you can pat them with essential oils, and your laundry comes out smelling fabulous.
Oh, what a great idea. What a great idea.
Yeah, you can add your own smells to it.
You know, but I happen to like it, you know, Penny and I do the laundry, and I don't like to use scent-free stuff. I actually like to use laundry detergent with a scent.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea why, but, you know, when I take out the laundry, I sort of smell it, and it has the scent. Makes me feel better. It's probably an absolutely ridiculous thing in the world, but I do it anyway. It doesn't make a difference. I'm going to try this, and I'm going to try to put essential oils in and see what it is. So I'm going to go do it. So we're going to have to circle back to this a couple of weeks from now to see whether or not I feel better about my laundry. But I'm going to get one of those wool dryer balls and put it with essential oil and see what it does.
And let's hear our final comment today. This one comes to us from a listener in Wisconsin.
Hi, I was just listening to Zorba as I'm driving on a road trip, and he commented about how men's Cialis and Viagra are like 50 cents a pill. And I just want to point out it's still a man's world, because anything that goes in a woman's vajayjay costs 200 times that kind of money. And that's it. Thanks for the great show. Bye-bye.
Oh, that is absolutely the case. That is so funny. That is so interesting.
Why is that, though? Why is that?
Yeah, why does that happen? Well, that's exactly it. Why is it more expensive? Carl, there's some things that are imponderables in life, and these are one of those imponderable things that I simply can't answer. People always say, have you ever been stuck in answering a question? That is one of the questions that I am stuck and I cannot possibly answer. So I will leave that up to our listeners' imagination.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. But before we take another break, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite nitpickers and backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. But wait, Brad, don't play that theme song yet. Not yet. Zorba, on a recent show, you were talking about using a long-handled brush for doing your dishes. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
You do. Okay. And you were questioning the use of a microwave to sterilize sponges.
Yes.
And of course, this caused quite a stir among sponge loyalists. So, of course, they're out there.
Of course.
So now we know
they're out there. You can see them on Saturdays going down the street with sponges hanging from them as they're jogging. Sponge loyalists generally jog on Saturday mornings.
Okay. We're going to hear from these sponge loyalists. Actually, we're going to absorb some blowback from the Sponge Police.
Absorb.
That's a little gross. Anyways, this is David in Springfield, Missouri, posted the following message on the Zorba Pasture on Your Health Facebook page. David writes, "Dear Zorba, my comment is about sponges and sanitary problems. Whether Atlantic, Pacific, or Indian sponges, or the kind available here in Missouri, microwaves can clearly sterilize sponges, dishcloths, and even dental hygiene products, with care and the proper equipment, of course." So here's what you do, David says. Rinse sponge well, place wet sponge in a covered glass baking dish, and cook until you see steam filling the dish for a minute or so, then stop. David adds, "And don't be stupid and try anything with the sponge until it has fully cooled off."
Yeah, right. Of course. That would
probably be a hot sponge, right?
Yeah. And, you know, something that makes sense to me, because if you're actually heating up the sponge so that you have steam going through the sponge, steam, of course, starts at 212 Fahrenheit. And so if you have it, you're actually going to definitely make the sponge cleaner. I don't know what that does to the extra sponge material because I haven't done it, but obviously it, for the sponges that he buys, you know, it doesn't destroy it. And that's a good idea. And the question is, how often do you actually do it? What difference is it going to make? I mean, I throw away sponges when they get dirty, but you know what? I'm going to try that next time.
Yeah.
Before I throw away my sponge, I'm going to put it in a dish. Like you say, microwave safe. Hard to say that word.
That
microwave
really
safe dish. Put it in there, heat it up, get the steam in there and see what it does. Good idea. Thank you for the tip.
But you're not going to switch over to sponges, right? You're going to still use your dishwashing brush, your dish brush probably?
I'm going to use my brush. I'm not switching. But I've got sponges at home.
For counters, sponges, right?
For the counters. I mean, yeah. You can't use a brush on a counter.
No.
That doesn't do anything. I mean,
right.
You got to do – I mean, do you use a sponge to wash your dishes?
No, I'm a brusher too. Yeah, definitely a long-handled brush.
Yeah. How about your wife?
Yep, she uses the same brush. We share the same dish brush.
Yeah. Were you brought up with brushes as a child or sponges?
I feel like we had a dish rag. And whenever I see that now at someone's house, I go,
disgusting.
I don't know. Yeah,
a dish rag. That's right. Dish rags.
As long as that funky, moldy smell going.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Enough
of that.
This is radio. It's not smell-o-vision. It's radio.
Do you think Zorba should brush up on his dishwashing technique? Or maybe he should just throw in the towel altogether. Give us your thoughts or tips, which we're always happy to soak up, of course, by posting on our Facebook page or just sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Way too many puns there. We have more of your calls to come. We have another topic to discuss. And Zorba will be answering more of your emails, of course. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is the number to call where anytime you can leave a voicemail for Zorba. And then just stay tuned. You might hear yourself on a future episode of the show. But before we hear from more of our listeners, Zorba, a new study found that COVID-19 lockdowns during the pandemic may have prevented air pollution-related deaths for tens of thousands of people?
Right. It's really, really interesting. An article published in The Lancet. The Lancet is a major journal, and it was looking at air pollution, not only in the U.S., air pollution that occurs in China and in Europe all along. And as you can imagine, when the economy slowed down, manufacturing slowed down, if you look at where you're living, people are not driving their cars as much. People are staying at home. And as a result, there was less air pollution worldwide. And that air pollution seems to have resulted in a decrease in the number of deaths for people of COPD and asthma. Because if you've got COPD or you've got asthma, air pollution makes things worse. And this is really important for people in the inner city where air pollution is much more common. Living by a highway, increased air pollution. Living by a manufacturing plant, increased air pollution. And so this has been a boon. I mean, COVID lockdown has been a boon to people who have COPD and asthma because they're not nearly as bothered. Isn't that? I find that really interesting, don't you?
That's a small silver lining for this whole pandemic.
Well, it's a very, very strange silver lining. And by the way, this is similar to what is probably going to happen, by the way, with the influenza season this particular year in Australia and New Zealand. There's much less influenza because people are wearing masks in this country. A lot of people are wearing masks, so they're less likely to spread it. So it's interesting that the things in the air that we cause as humans, air pollution, influenza, are less during the COVID epidemic. And getting back to the air pollution thing, you know, it's a leading environmental cause of death. According to the World Health Organization, air pollution really contributed in some way to literally about 4 million premature deaths worldwide. And that is decreased because we don't have the same industrialization going on. And once again, it reminds us that we are changing the planet and we've got to do more to reduce air pollution, carbon dioxide, nitrous oxide, and particulate matter than we're doing because it really affects our health. It's really a very important thing. And silver lining, it shows us how we affect our environment and how our environment affects us. And if we don't protect the environment and make it better, that we can run into problems. And here we have an example where we're more stewards of the environment during the time of the shutdown, because during the shutdown, we actually are putting less stuff into the air, which is really helping. So if you've got asthma, you've got heart disease, if you're not living in the West where we have air pollution, obviously, from fires, this is good news.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. That's the number to call. Leave a message for Zorba anytime. Let's get back to more of those voicemails. Here's one from a caller in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
Yes, I've recently started a new diabetic medicine that I take once a day. I have changed my diet and eliminated sugary drinks, but I'm still seeing an increase in my blood glucose overnight from about 3 a.m. to about the time I wake up. It's just consistently rising. I do have a continuous monitor that tells me that, because I'm not getting up at 4 a.m. pricking my finger. I have some questions about what I can do to help that. You know, is it something I'm doing during the day that causes it, or is it something I'm not doing in the evening? Thank you.
These are natural ways our body actually is dealing with our metabolism. Not unusual. We're finding out more with continuous monitoring, because people are not waking up at 3 and 4 in the morning to check their blood sugar, that what's going on overnight actually often affects you during the day. And you think about it, you know, you live 24 hours a day and you sleep in bed somewhere between 6 and 8 hours. And, you know, that's roughly a third of the day. And during that time, I have people who say, look, my blood sugar is normal during the day. Why is it elevated? Why is my hemoglobin A1C, which is a measurement of your blood glucose overall. Why is it elevated? Because during the day it's fine. And the answer is, yeah, it's fine during the day, but it's not fine at night. This is where you got to talk to your doctor or your diabetic nurse practitioner or your physician assistant. You've got to talk to your healthcare provider and say, look, it's elevated at nighttime. What should I do? Because sometimes it means you've got to take A, another medication, or B, change the timing of your medication. But still, the overall issue is the hemoglobin A1C. That's the batting average of diabetes. And if your hemoglobin A1C is 7 or less, if you're over 65, it should be 8 or less. If your hemoglobin A1C is in the proper place, the glucose at nighttime may not really mean very much at all. It's the overall blood sugar that really matters. But talk to your doc. That's important.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, we always appreciate our listeners posting on the Zorba Pastor On Your Health Facebook page. So it's time again for Facebook feedback.
Facebook feedback.
All right, Zorba, this is from a listener named Brad in Seattle. And Brad writes, you had someone on the show today complaining of something like cradle cap. We had 10 kids. Wow. We had 10 kids, and several of them had cradle cap.
That's a lot of kids. That's a lot of kids.
That's a lot of cradle cap.
I mean, I've got 4 kids. 10 kids is a lot of kids.
Brad continues, we tried every medication and treatment we could find. Finally, someone suggested rubbing their scalp with Crisco.
Yes, right. That's an old-fashioned treatment.
I would never recommend that anyone eat that stuff,
right.
But for cradle cap, it worked. I just massaged it into the scalp before bed, then left it until morning, and they never had cradle cap again. What do you think?
Right. Well, basically, cradle cap is it's a form of seborrheic related, we'll say, to dandruff. And when they rub Crisco or any other oil into the scalp, basically, it's sort of loosening the plaques that are on there, and it'll come off when you take off the Crisco in the morning. And that's an old-fashioned folk remedy that is very effective and works. Cradle cap does go away. When I was in medical school, the mothers used to call it cradle crap. I just wanted to tell you something.
Oh, really?
Is the nickname for cradle cap.
Okay.
and it does go away over time. And Crisco is good. Probably Spry, which is what my mother used, which was cheaper than Crisco, would probably actually
work. Is that just lard, or what is Spry?
I don't know. They were artificial. They were cheaper than butter when you were going to fry things, and it was some kind of an oil. It was some kind of a vegetable oil. It certainly wasn't a petroleum oil, because you use Crisco in cooking. So I don't know what it is. I think it's a hydrogenated, or it's a dehydrogenated vegetable oil. Do you have Crisco in your house?
I don't think we have any Crisco, but
no. But that
I
was
think just one of our kids had Cradle Cap once, yeah, but uh-huh. I can't remember what we used. But yeah. 10 kids, that's a lot of Crisco.
Yeah, you know, 10 kids are a lot of Crisco, exactly.
I always thought Cradle Cap would be a good name for a metal band.
Cradle
Cap. A heavy metal band? Yeah Cradle sure. Cap.
Yeah, and they could also be Cradle Crap would be a good name for the heavy metal band, too.
Do you have a helpful tip for the show? Just post it on our Facebook page. And don't forget, you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right, back to our callers at 800-462-7413. Let's hear now a voicemail from a caller in Buffalo, New York.
Hi, I am an African American female with Malaysia. And recently I had a breakout. And I was giving a ointment to help clear it up, and it broke me out worse and left some real dark spots that looked like burns on my face. When I went back to the doctor, he gave me a medication called alcomtasone. I'm just wondering if this will work, because it looks like it turned it darker. I mean, the redness and everything is gone, but the actual marks are dark like a burn. Thank you.
Well, with melasma, which is a skin infection that affects more African Americans than others and can lead to a depigmentation or an increased pigmentation of the skin, this is where you really want to consult with a dermatologist. There are different things that can be used that basically reduce the inflammation that's associated with it. It's important to get a derm consult. I look at it as a family doc. If I see it and I recognize it, I go, that's beyond my skill set. And I think she brings up an important point. I don't know which doctor she went to, but this is really where a dermatologist counts. Lots of things we can do with the skin, as family docs and primary care. But dermatologists really have extra training for this. And when you've got a problem, if one dermatologist is not answering that problem, that's often where a second opinion, often at a tertiary site in Buffalo, they've got the University of Buffalo Medical Center, which is par none a great medical center. They've got a number of good clinics, big clinics, that have dermatologists. So if one dermatologist doesn't give you the answer, because these things tend to be chronic, you want to go to another dermatologist, in a large group. That's often who I go to, who may be a specialist in exactly melasma, exactly what's bothering her. So important to have that looked at again if it doesn't get better by another dermatologist. That would be my recommendation. Hard thing to answer on the radio because you've got to look at it. Once again, my skill set is to know what questions to answer and what questions not to answer. That's the important thing of really being a good practitioner.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And before we head out today, Zorba, let's take this opportunity to give one of your naysayers a little bit of airtime. This is the segment we call Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
All right, Zorba, usually here we do an email or a Facebook message for this segment. This time we're going to hear a voicemail from a listener named Kevin, and Kevin's in Melrose, Wisconsin.
Yeah, I have a beef with Dr. Pester. He said that no matter where you get your beef, it ends up coming from an industrialized farm, and that's actually completely not true. I, in fact, just brought two cattle right off of my open pasture directly to the butcher, and they went directly to my customers. I mean, I know that's the way that most people get their beef, but it is totally easy, especially in Wisconsin, and I know right there in Madison, to call up a local farmer and have your beef come directly off the farm. You can even pick which cow it is. My customers know the names of the cows they got. They got pictures beforehand and everything. So it's not all industrial, and there's a bunch of us out here really trying to make a difference and change the way that that's done. And my beef is 100% zero input other than pasture hay and apples if I feel like giving them a treat. They only get medication if they're sick. They don't get any kind of hormones or anything. They are left on the land to drink fresh water and eat fresh grass as long as possible, and then they get hay for the rest of the winter to hold them until the grass comes back up. I enjoy your show. Thanks for doing it, but you're just off a little bit on that.
What do you think, Zorba?
Well, you know, I don't remember exactly what I said with that, but I do want to interact with exactly what he said, and he's exactly right. I think what I was talking about at that time is when you go to a regular grocery store and
sure.
buying beef and it's sitting there behind it, it's generally, and I'm going to use the word generally industrialized beef, but he brings up a really, really good point that you can get a wonderful product from a local farmer. You can have really good beef and it doesn't have chemicals. It's brought up in pasture. And all of a sudden, you have a much better product that, frankly, is healthier because it's brought up in a healthier way. And I think that point is really well taken. I think it really behooves all of us, if we want to support local farmers, local agriculture, to go to that. So I want to second what he said. And if I misspoke, I apologize for misspeaking. And if I was misunderstood, I apologize for that. But I want to do is go full force with I really like the idea of buying locally. And the fact is, you know, maybe we should all try to do that as much as possible. And I did that for a couple of years. I split part of a cow with other people, and I used that meat. But I found that I didn't go through as much as I really wanted to, so I stopped doing it. But the reality is I may start to go back to it. I certainly have started to do it with a salmon producer, which actually goes up to Alaska in our local market. And I think doing that with beef is a great idea. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for bringing that up.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it does. It would behoove all of us.
Correct.
Do you have a beef with the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page, or you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Carl.
If you missed anything during the show, or you just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org, or of course through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave your question at 800-462-7413. And please do visit the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page for Zorba's frequent pandemic updates. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor and Tom Clark, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.